That might be my favorite intro video we've ever had. God, do you just get around people sometimes and it's like blah, 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 blah. They just won't shut up. That's what we're going to talk about this month. Subjects we've talked about a lot around here, actually, because I feel like it's a subject that we as humans always kind of revert back to. We kind of remember how we should speak, and then we go back to speaking what comes naturally instead of what comes supernaturally. The Bible says this, though, in Matthew 12, 34, "For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of." I'm not going to, because you'd get spoiled around here, but I can really read that verse, say let's pray, and go home, and there's the sermon. The mouth speaks what the heart is full of. What comes out of our mouth, especially in times of stress, times of anxiety, times of inebriation, is many times what the heart is full of. So we're going to be talking about those subjects over the next few weeks. We're going to be talking about lying, critical spirit. We're going to be talking about that subject that I know we never deal with around Action Church. We're going to be talking about gossip. Not this crowd. So then we're going to be talking about a subject that is almost second nature to most of us. Complaining. I don't even know that we mean to complain. I don't know that many times we realize we're complaining. But the reality is we as human beings had a tendency to focus on the negative instead of the positive. We had this tendency to wallow, if you will, in what's going wrong instead of what's going right. 90% of our life can be clicking, going good, and we focus on the thing that went wrong. They say if you have a good experience with a business, you will tell two people. If you have a bad experience with a business, you will tell 10 people. We love to praise the negative, and we overlook the positive. Anytime I think about complaining, my mind goes automatically back to the Old Testament. I think about the Israelites. Those were God's chosen people. And they're in captivity. They're slaves for hundreds of years. Now think about this. Generation upon generation upon generation, you're in slavery. Then God did miracle after miracle. He sends Moses. Has anybody watched the Moses thing on Netflix? Man, it's great. It just came out. I can't encourage you enough to go watch that. God sends a man named Moses. He goes to Pharaoh. He gets the people of Israel released. And for the first time in hundreds of years, they're free. After being enslaved, they're now free. I've never done prison. I've never been enslaved. But I would imagine after having my freedoms taken from me for hundreds of years, the moment I got freedom, I would think life just looked a little bit different. I would like to think that I'd have just a more of a positive outlook on life once I get freedom. I mean, God came along and worked miracle after miracle. He did all kinds of things to work in the Israelites' favor to get them free. He parted the Red Sea. He drowned Pharaoh's army. And then they're out in the wilderness and God's feeding his people with bread from heaven. He's quenching their thirst with water from rocks. Their clothes never ran out and they're free. And what do God's people do? They complained. They griped. They whined. In fact, it's almost comical to me, if it wasn't sad, how much they complained. The Bible says in Exodus 14, they said to Moses, they being the children of Israel, the nation of Israel, "Was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us out to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Now think about that. In the Bible, Egypt is a type of captivity. It's the thing that has you imprisoned. It's the thing that is controlling your life and bringing your life misery. And they said, what have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? What have you done by bringing us out of our hurts? What have you done by bringing us out of our habits? What have you done by bringing us out of our hangups? We would have rather stayed there in prison. Why have you brought us out here? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? Boy, isn't that a perfect example of we get comfortable in our discomfort? They're enslaved, and Moses comes to save them. They're like, hey, no, we're good. We like somebody telling us what to do. We like being controlled. We like not having to think. We like doing things that we don't want to do, but we become comfortable doing them. Sounds a little bit like our country in 2024, don't it? Oh, but I'm not getting political. But leave us there. Leave us there. Didn't we say to you, leave us alone, leave us to the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. It would be better for us to live as captives than to die as free men. They're complaining. They're griping. God's moving in their midst. God is moving in their favor. God is working greatness in their lives. And all they can focus on is the negative. Man, if that's not human nature, I don't know what it is. I see this so many times in marriages. Man, one person complains nonstop about the other person, and they never focus on all the good things that person does. I've used this a lot because I heard it recently. It said, we'll find a spouse, and the spouse is with us, and we'll love 80% of everything that spouse does. But we'll focus on the 20% that we selfishly say isn't meeting our needs. So we'll go out and we'll look and we'll find somebody else that meets those 20%. And then suddenly realize we have an 80% void instead of a 20% void. We focus on the negative instead of the positive. And they're out here, they're free for the first time. God's providing for them. God's taking care of them. God's meeting their needs. Literally, they wake up in the morning and it's rained bread. They literally go to the rocks and drink water. Man, they sound like us. Like I said, when I read that initially, I start to laugh, and then the laugh turns to almost tears from conviction that I'm so guilty of the same thing. I like how Moses responds, though. He says, you're not grumbling against us, but against the Lord. He said, you're projecting on me, but you're really complaining against God. You're complaining against the one who set you free. You're complaining against the one who has his hand upon you. You're complaining against the one who is directing your paths. You're complaining against the one who has brought every blessing you have in your life. Instead of looking at the blessings, you're focusing on what you feel he hasn't brought to your life. You're not complaining against me. I love that. Moses is probably the greatest leader in the Bible, actually. And here's an example of his leadership. He doesn't take it personal. He's not concerned with the masses griping against him, because at the end of the day, he knows it's not about him. They're griping against God. Imagine if every time we complain, we're not just complaining against our circumstances. We're not just complaining about traffic. We're not just complaining about that other person. But what if in God's eyes, every time we opened our mouth in negativity and complaining, he looked at it as we were complaining against him? We're complaining against the fact that he's in control. We're complaining against the fact that he knows better. We're complaining about the fact that he's directing our paths. You're complaining sitting in traffic, but you don't know had there not been traffic, you'd have been in that wreck 10 minutes up the road. What I want us to do today is I want us to personalize our complaints. What is it that you complain about the most? You know what it is. Maybe some of you just complain so much it's everything. I came to the conclusion yesterday, I'm doing an event in Ball Ground, I'm putting on a festival, and there's 100-something vendors, and there's 4 different bands, and there's production crews, and there's beer trailers, and there's just a lot of stuff going on that I have to kind of oversee. And somebody looked at me, and I guess I had been complaining, and I guess I made the statement, shocking, I know, because I'm such a loving person. Man, I hate people. The person stopped and they looked at me and they said, did you say you hate people? I'm laughing. I said, I hate people. They said, man, you have chosen the wrong profession. I said, what do you mean? I said, your whole life is people. Everywhere you turn, it is people. Everybody's walking up to you because they know you and it's people. So if you hate people, you have a funny way of showing it. But what is it you complain the most about? Maybe you're like Grumpy Tom. Does everybody know who Grumpy Tom is? Raise your hand, Grumpy Tom, if you don't know Grumpy Tom. Right back there in the back. Let me tell you about Grumpy Tom. First of all, he's a Yankee. So that's kind of his pass. Because Yankees kind of just grumpy people. Amen? Amen. Here's the thing about Tom. You will never see Tom smile when he walks in the building. He's happy. He really is happy. I've learned that Grumpy Tom is happy. I'm going to start a Grumpy Tom meme like the Grumpy Cat meme. I just had that thought. But I asked him today, and I knew I shouldn't have asked Grumpy Tom this. He's Grumpy Tom. Tom, how you doing? Tired? Sore? Sick? Been a long week. And I said, man, you need to hear this sermon today. I'm literally going to go home. I kid you not. I told him, I'm going to go home and save it on my computer as the Grumpy Tom sermon. Some people just complain a lot. My mother-in-law is a Yankee. It must run in the Yankee world. She's from Michigan. It's too hot. It's too cold. Like, this is how bad my mother-in-law complains. Is she here today? Oh, she ain't even here. We really gonna have fun. Here's how bad my mother-in-law complains. She complains that Georgia, green trees, North Georgia mountains, spring, summer, fall, winter seasons, close to the ocean, close to the mountains, Georgia, thriving economy, Georgia, she complains that it's not Detroit. Like, that just shows you complain a lot. Now, she's from Detroit. She lived in Detroit forever. And I reminded her, I said, every time she says, I said, you do, in Detroit, and it's always comparing. I said, you know Detroit was the first city in American history that went bankrupt. It's not a good place. I've never met anybody from Georgia who retires and says, when I retire, I'm moving to Detroit. There's a lot of people in Detroit that say, man, we can't wait to move to Georgia. Some people just complain a lot. So what is it that you complain the most about? Single people wish they were married. Married people wish they were single. No matter how much money you make, it's never enough. Your boss drives you nuts. Your schedule is crazy. The weather stinks. The Wi-Fi is too slow. I was in Ball Ground. That was probably the number one complaint I heard yesterday at this festival. I didn't even know there was such thing as citywide Wi-Fi. That I'm not really technology advanced like that. People literally kept coming to me and they're like, what's the password for the city Wi-Fi? I was like, is there city Wi-Fi? Oh, yeah. It shows up on this thing. Do you know the password? I said, well, why would I know the password? Just use your cell service. There's too many people here. It's slow. It's a beautiful day. In a beautiful city. With beautiful people. Great music playing. The beer's flowing. Vendors everywhere. It was just a fun day. And you're worried that your phone's moving too slow. People just love to complain. A favorite, and I'm guilty of this. Remember how we didn't want cable? We wanted to pay for what we wanted to watch. Cable's too much. Too much money. So instead of paying the $150 for cable, I don't know what cable costs. I'm making that number up. We pay $200 a month to have Netflix and Peacock and Paramount Plus and YouTube TV and the ESPN app and Hulu and like all the Disney Plus. You see, you have all those. Yeah, we do. And then we will flip through all of those. And there's nothing to watch. Like if Christine and I don't know what we're watching before we sit down, it's 45 minutes of flipping to the point that we give up. And she sits on one couch and I sit on the other couch and we send each other TikToks. That's a good, healthy marriage. That's how we roll. Have access to more TV than ever in our lives and there's nothing to watch. We just love to complain. But we need to understand this. The problem isn't that there isn't anything to watch. The problem isn't the weather. The problem isn't traffic. The problem isn't any of those things. The problem's not your weight that you can't lose. The problem isn't your money. The problem is so many times we get so busy living and going through the motions of life that we don't even realize it, but we've taken our eyes off the goodness of God and we've placed our eyes on ourselves. Instead of looking at how good God is to us and make no mistake about it, we are a group of people who serve a good God. This group is blessed. Does anybody in this building not have running water? Does anybody in this building not have a roof over your head? Even the homeless people that are here, they have a roof over their head because they stay in our building. Then listen, no offense to you, I can look at you, ain't none of you going hungry. Most of us have two cars. Matter of fact, we're so, in the Lamb house, we're so blessed. We have a house for our cars called a garage. Like my cars go into their own house. It's amazing. We have bedrooms in our home that don't even get used. We have bathrooms in our house that don't even get used. My dogs, and I'm not even an animal person, are on more medicine than I'm on. My dogs have beds that lay on the floor that are nicer than any bed I had when I was a kid. Literally, last week I come home, Christine's like, hey, can you take this new dog bed upstairs? I don't understand why we have a new dog bed. I feel like we've had 20 dog beds. But apparently the dogs tear them up. They tear up the beds and we buy them new ones. That's how spoiled the dogs are. I throw it on the bed because it's brand new. I take a shower. I get out of the shower. It was a hot shower, so I wanted to cool down. So I lay down, and I didn't realize the dog pillow was underneath me as I lay back. And I hit it, and my first instinct was, oh, I got to get off this dog pillow. And I was like, oh. Dog pillow's nice. I reach over, I grab my phone, and I lay on the dog pillow while I surf TikTok. That's how spoiled we are. Yet we'll complain about it. Like my wife calls me every day and asks me what I want for dinner. Like I have options. And there's people all over the world that don't even know when they're going to get their next meal. We take our eyes off God and we put them on ourselves. And it leads to constant complaining. There's a guy in the New Testament, you know I love him, his name's Paul. And there's a portion of scripture where Paul, if anybody had a right to complain, it was Paul. Paul had one goal in life that he wanted to accomplish on his own. Paul wanted to go to Rome and preach the gospel. Rome in that day and time was like the New York City. It was the place where things happened. If you could reach Rome, you could reach the world. He wanted to go to Rome and preach the gospel, and he asked God nonstop, allow me to go to Rome and preach the gospel. God sent him everywhere else. God, let me go to Rome, and God sent him here. God, let me go to Rome, and God sent him here. God, let me go to Rome, and yeah, he sent him to Corinth. He sent him to Thessalonica. He sent him to all the other places, and Paul wanted to go to Rome. And then something happened to Paul. Paul was arrested for preaching the gospel. Goes back to what I talked about last week. Paul was arrested for being in the center of God's will. Doing what God told him to do. I told you, the will of God's a dangerous place. And suddenly something happens to Paul as he's arrested. They send him to jail in Rome. Almost like a sick sense of humor from God. You wanted to go to Rome? I got you. You want to do your own thing? I got you. You want to go to Rome when I wanted you to go to these other places? I got you. But you're going to go on my terms. Now you're going as a prisoner. I got to be real honest with you. I don't know that I could have dealt with it. For 24 hours a day, he was chained between two Roman guards, locked in a cell. I wanted to go there as a preacher, and now I'm there as a prisoner. And I don't know that I can handle like Paul. I just think I'd get a little irritated with God. Now, let me make this very clear. I am not a dummy, and I understand getting irritated with God does me no good. But it don't change me from getting irritated with God. I still get irritated with God sometimes. I get mad at God sometimes. I fight with God sometimes. I argue with God sometimes. I don't ever win. But he's a big guy with big shoulders, and he can take it. If I'm now in prison, I'm going to be irritated. I'm going to be very tempted to complain to God. I'm going to be tempted to remind God what I've done for him. I'm going to be tempted to take my eyes off God and put my eyes on myself. And when I do that, my flesh comes out. And God, I've been serving you. You knew I wanted to come to this city and preach the gospel, and I've been serving you faithfully, and you send me here as a prisoner. The floor is hard. The food is bad. The body odor of this Roman soldier you have me tied to is horrible. Because you ain't heard nobody complain like I can complain, baby. Say amen, Christine. I'm going to be complaining. God's going to hear all about it. These are the thoughts going through my head, and I'm going to begin to feel sorry for myself as I complain. Not Paul. Look what Paul says, Philippians. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky. He says, do everything without grumbling and complaining. Do everything without arguing. Do everything without focusing on the negative. Whatever God throws at you, you do it. I have a saying that I say, and it irritates people sometimes when I say it, but this is when my mind's in the right place. I'm always like, it is what it is. I can't change it. Yesterday at our festival, we had fought all week long with our beer distributor about how much beer we needed. They didn't like the idea of bringing the amount of beer that we wanted because they said Ball Ground was a small city and it would never go through it. At 4:30, we begin to run out of beer. People begin to freak out that were working with me. What are we going to do? And I looked at them and said, it is what it is. We can't make more beer. You can't just go pick up more beer. Well, I said, we're going to post about it. It is what it is. We're going to post in such a way that it seems like a good thing. Ball grind, you're so crazy. You're so into what we're doing. You ran us out of beer at 4:30. Congratulations. People love that. It would have been awesome. Now, we ended up with more beer. So how'd you end up with more beer? I can't tell you that, but we ended up with more beer. Make sure that doesn't get on the podcast. I don't need the DOR to hear that. We ended up with more beer. And it worked out. But it is what it is. We love to complain. We love to grumble. And there's a lot of spiritual reasons why we shouldn't complain. There's a lot of practical reasons why we shouldn't complain. But today I just want to kind of focus on a couple of the practical reasons. There's a great book by a guy, I read it years ago, named of Dr. Travis Bradbury. And he wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. I read this the first time I ever preached on this. It's probably 20 years ago. He had researched, he spent his life researching the idea of complaining. And what he says is repeated complaining, don't miss this, repeated complaining hardwires our brain to do what? Complain. The more we complain, the more natural it becomes to complain. The more we complain, our default becomes to complain. That's why when you meet people who complain a lot, that's why they complain a lot. Because the more you complain, the more your brain is hardwired to focus on the negative in your life. Nothing can go right. You begin to have preconceived notions of something before it even happens. You expect something bad to happen, and therefore you get what you expect. Had a vendor show up yesterday. I send a vendor email out to everyone. My vendor emails, they're thorough. They give you everything that you need to know. In the vendor email, I made it very clear you will not be able to pull up to your space. It's in a downtown area. Bring a cart. This guy pulls up. I need to get to my space. I said, sir, you're not going to be able to get to your space. I said in the email, I didn't read the email. Not my issue. You're not going to be able to get to your space. When I tell you the entire setup, he complained. Every time I tried to keep it light, man, you good? Hey, can I help you grab something? Hey, what are you? Man, I got a bad. I said, man, I'm sorry your knee's hurting. Man, but everything I can do, complain, complain, complain. I won't be back to this event. I won't be back. This event's going to be horrible. Now, the event hasn't even happened yet. Not one person has showed up. We're 5 hours before the event starts. He's already convinced himself it was going to be a bad event. He's already convinced himself he's not going to make any money. He's already convinced himself it's going to be a long, miserable day. Well, guess what? There's so many people that show up that you cannot walk. Literally, that's how many people were there. So because I'm a spiteful individual, I just said, I'm going to walk by old boy's tent. Because he's going to be having a good time selling tons of stuff. I walked by his tent 3 different occasions. The tent's so full, I can't get in. Towards the end of the night, I walked by again because, again, I'm spiteful, so I'm going to keep walking by where he can tell me I was right. Finally, there's only a couple people I walk and say, man, how's that knee? Hurts. This is not what I expected. I said, what? People at a festival? Hey, it's just not what I expected. I won't be. And he starts to say for about the 20th time to me, I cut him off. I said, I get it. You won't be back. Matter of fact, you're not allowed to come back. I said, well, what do you mean? I said, nope. I said, you've complained all day long. I said, I've walked by your booth all day long and there's been people in it. I said, at the end of the night, you're going to be able to pull your car up here and unload. You're not going to have to take it by cart. And I said, but you've complained all day long. And I said, you could have sold $10,000 worth of stuff today and you'd still be complaining. I said, because you're the most miserable son of a bitch I have ever met in my life. All of a sudden, I see every head turn from every other vending tent. My people know me. This guy didn't know me. They're smiling. He just sat there, dumbfounded. He had already decided not to have a good day because of his negativity at 7:15 in the morning. What a miserable way to live. You chose to get into the vending industry as a career. How'd you think it was going to be, sweetheart? Like, why? The lady next to him comes up to me afterwards. She said, I had a record day today. Thank you so much. I said, well, you're welcome. She was probably 72 years old. Had to care. There was a big grass field. They had done a bunch of construction in this grass field. It was supposed to be done 2 months ago. It wasn't done until the day before. It was really bumpy. It was hard to carry stuff. I watched that lady. She came. She goes, I won't be able to do this next year if it's in the same place. I said, it won't be in the same place. But all day long, she just toted her stuff there. Got it there. Ain't it amazing how that works? What you feed into your mind will come out of your body. We start complaining before we ever experience something to complain about. I've watched it when people come in this church. You'll bring a friend of yours and they've heard something about Gary Lamb. And they come in with a chip on their shoulder. There ain't nothing I can do to make them happy. Before they ever come in, they decide, I'm not going to like this church. I'm not going to like the music. I'm not going to like the preacher. And guess what happens at the end of the service? They didn't like the church. They didn't like the music. And they didn't like the preacher. But the problem is it had nothing to do with the church. It had nothing to do with the music. And it had nothing to do with the preacher. It had to do with the fact that they feed garbage into their mind and garbage comes out. Amen. Man, back to that verse. For the mouth speaks out what the heart is full of. We predetermine whether or not we're going to have a bad attitude. I'm guilty of this myself. I'm not preaching to you today. I am preaching with you today. I can't tell you how many times Christine Lamb has looked at me and said, you're not even there yet. And you're already mad. Try to go in with a good attitude. Why when someone tells us to try to go in with a good attitude, does that just make it worse? It's our pride. Christine had it happen last week or 2 weeks ago, sometime recently. I can't remember what it was. She had to go to something she didn't want to go to. And why do women have a softer heart to listen than we men? We men get prideful. I looked at her and said, I love you because I don't want to fight with her. I don't want to fight with her because I'm going to win because I'm always right. It gets old. But I looked at her and said, hey, you already got a bad attitude. You ain't even been there yet. She changed her attitude. She had a decent time at the event. We program our mind ahead of time. We've got to get there. We want to train our mind to focus on what is good, not what is bad. We want to train our mind to focus that on which is pleasant, which is helpful, which is hopeful, and instead of always focusing on the negative. Your mind can be trained to focus on certain things. If I asked you right now to look around this room and make a list of all the things mentally that you saw that were black in this room, you'd come up with a list of things. But after I asked you to do that, if I looked at you and said, what'd you notice that was purple in here? You probably couldn't name one thing. It's not that there's not anything that's purple. The chairs are purple. Purplish. I'm colorblind a little bit. But you weren't looking for those things. Your mind will always find what it's looking for. You want to find good, you'll find good. You want to find negative, you'll find negative. I get why Yankees are so negative. You're from the North. You ain't got sweet tea. Y'all ain't got seasoning in your food. You don't know what cat head biscuits are. You don't know what sorghum syrup is. I get it. You don't just get to go to somewhere and get a sweet tea unless it's Cracker Barrel up north. I get it. I'd be negative too. It's gross. It snows. The snow turns dirty. Yeah, it's yucky. No wonder you moved to Georgia. Man, don't move back. Well, if you don't go to this church, you can move back. But if you go to this church, you can stay. We program our mind a certain way. So how do we do that? Here's what we're going to do. First of all, if you can change your circumstances, do something about it. That's the first thing. Look at the thing you're complaining about and ask yourself, can I change this? If you're having negative circumstances, something that is unpleasant, something that is not right, something that you wish could change, and you can't do something about it, we're not going to go through life and pretend like everything's okay when it's not okay. It's not a sin to notice something's not right. When it boils into sin is when we complain and we complain and we complain and we complain and we do nothing about it. You complain about your weight all the time. You can change that. You might not be willing to take the steps you need to do to change that, but you can change that. You complain about your finances. You can change that. You don't have a money problem. You got a spending problem. I guarantee you 95% of you that say you have a money problem, if you came to me and showed me your finances, I would show you that you do not have a money problem. You have a spending problem. You spend more than you make. You can change that. You and your spouse don't get along. You can change that. Change how you speak to them. Change how you respond to them. It took me and Christine years to figure this out. I did really good this week. Normally on event week, I am not a pleasant person to be around. This week, I did really good until Friday, the night before, we went to eat. I made it all the way to the last minute. It's progress. Christine said something. I snapped at her. Her whole demeanor changed. We sat down. I got irritated because the table was wobbling. And I don't get irritated at restaurants, do I? My mom was a waitress my whole life. That's probably the one area of my life I have lots of patience. Unless the waitress comes up to my table and my cup is empty, she says, "Do you want something to drink?" No, I want to sit here with my cup empty. Freaking fill the cup. Other than that, I'm really good at restaurants. But I was getting irritated. Now, do not go to a restaurant with Rick Coe because he's the opposite. He will get irritated about everything at a restaurant. I won't get irritated about anything. I'll just roll with it. But I started getting irritated Friday night. She looked at me and she said, "Here's what we're going to go do. We're going to go home. You're not going to talk to me the rest of the night until the festival starts tomorrow. And then we can be married again. Or we can do what married people do and we can talk. But until then, no more talking because we're going to fight." I could change my circumstances by flipping a switch and realizing it's not fair to her that I'm taking my stress out on her. But guess what she did? She changed the circumstances. In the past, she would have tried to fix me. That don't work. She rolled with it. Guess what we ended up doing when we got home? We were home about 20 minutes. We ended up in the hot tub together. Just in a hot tub, you perverts, just sitting there enjoying music. We got out. We had a snack. We went to bed. For the first time in probably 8 years of doing events, we went to bed the night before an event without fighting. I wish I could say it was because of me. She changed the circumstances. There's some things you can change. I love the story of Nehemiah. You know the story. I've said it 1,000 times, so I'm not going to tell you. But the walls of Jerusalem are torn down. Jerusalem's getting attacked by all the enemies. Everyone knew this, but nobody did anything about it. They just complained about it. Nehemiah runs into some old friends. "Hey, how are things back at home?" "It's horrible, it's horrible, it's horrible, it's horrible, it's horrible." Nehemiah says, "Oh, well, I can complain about it being horrible back home, or I can go do something about it." Nehemiah went back and he rebuilt the wall. He changed his circumstances. If you can change your circumstances, change them. Don't complain about it. Don't gripe about it. See, we love to gripe about everything to everyone else because misery loves company. So we gripe to someone else, and they gripe back to us about their problems, and then we feel validated. Well, at least my life's not as bad as theirs. And they're looking at you saying, "Well, at least my life's not as bad as theirs." So it's temporarily a moment of feeling better about ourselves. If you can change the circumstances, change them. But that's not what I want to focus on either. I want to focus on this. If you can't change your circumstances, because there's some circumstances you can't change, change your perspective. If you can change the circumstances you're complaining about, change them. If you can't, it's like Stacy over here. She can't change the fact that she married John. She's stuck with him now. Can't change that. She made that mistake. She signed on the dotted line. It is what it is. So the only hope for her is to change her perspective. Instead of looking at the fact she's married to John, she seemed like I'm married to the mayor. Everybody knows my husband. He's got a sexy bald head. Long beard, which is double fold. Long beards are sexy, but they also cover up some of the ugliness. Win-win. And that's not just for John. It's for me too. I get it. It's all about perspective. I think this is what Christine would be. There's times when Christine says, I'm going to shave my beard off. No, you're not. It's not that she likes the beard. It just covers up some of the ugliness. Women don't get that luxury. Y'all can't grow a beard. Well, some of you can, but we don't want you to. Okay? We can cover up some of the ugly. Like, I thank God daily that I'm not bald because this covers up some of the ugly. Hair can come down here, beard can cover here, and all you can see is this. It's ugly, but it ain't much to see. You got to change your perspective. Can't change your circumstances. You change your perspectives. Now remember, Paul's in prison. He's chained to a Roman soldier, one on each side. Now remember, Paul wanted to go to Rome and preach the gospel. What Paul meant was he wanted to go to the center of town, stand there and preach, and thousands of people listen to him preach the gospel. That's what he wanted. But now he's chained between two prison guards, Roman guards, and he can't do that. But look what he says in Philippians. But he says, even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I am glad and I rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. Now you probably hear that and you're like, what does that mean? Go back for a minute, Xander, to the part, the very first of it. What does that mean? He's being poured out like a drink offering. It's from a Greek word called spendo. It means to spend it all. He says, I'm here being spent all of me. So what the priests would do in that day is they would take the best wine, the best honey. Honey was really hard to get. The best liquid, the most expensive liquid. And they would scoop it up and they would pour it over a burning coal fire. It would sizzle and smoke would go up to heaven. It was a sacrifice to God. They were laying the best on the altar. He says, here I am, and I'm giving my best on the altar. I'm being poured out right now. And some people think that's I'm being poured out like a drink offering, his martyrdom later on when he would be killed for his faith. No, no, no. This is a passive present tense verb. I had to look that up. I'm not that smart. It's a passive present tense verb. I even have to read it. What he's saying is, I'm currently being poured out. He's not saying I will be poured out by giving my life. He said, right now I'm being poured out. I'm being used by God. God has put me in a situation where I can still do what I felt led to do. I'm in Rome. I can still preach the gospel. Just because it's not in front of thousands of people, I'm locked in jail between two Roman guards. I've got a captive audience. I've got influencers. Roman guards were a big deal during this time. They were influencers. They were movers and shakers. They were people of prestige. He says, they got to hear the gospel from me. See, Paul said, I want to go do this, but I'm not the center of my own story. God had other plans. He's going to put me in prison where I have a captive audience. Every 8 hours, they'll change out the guards, and every 8 hours, I get to preach to new guards. Six guards a day will hear the gospel because I'm preaching to them nonstop. They will hear about Jesus because I'm preaching about him nonstop. And they will go back to their homes and they will share what I have shared with them. And it will influence, will grow. It's not my story, it's God's story. Look what he says. Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result of what? He's in prison. It has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone that I am in chains for Christ. That's power. But do you notice how it doesn't change that he's in prison? It doesn't change the fact that he's going to be killed. It doesn't change the fact that he's locked up. But his perspective changed. And when his perspective went from focusing on the negative to focusing on the positive, he's now telling the people he's writing to, what's happened to me is a good thing. The trials I'm going through are a good thing. The tribulations I'm going through are a good thing. The test I'm going through is a good thing. The trauma I'm going through is a good thing. Because now I get to preach the gospel to the influencers. You want to change a world, you change the influencers. You know why they're called influencers? As much as we hate that mindset nowadays, especially as old people, they're influencers. Here's why they're called influencers. Because they influence people. When you change the influencers, you bring about influence. Paul's sitting there. He's connecting now. When Paul's preaching in front of 1,000 people, he can't make a connection. When he's locked between two guards for 8 hours, friendships are being formed. Connections happening. Believe it or not, community is now happening. And they're more open to hearing what he has to say. And as a result, it became obvious to the entire palace guard that Paul's in prison for the cause of Christ. They're open to what he's saying, not because his circumstances changed, but his perspective changed. I can look back on the trials and tribulations in my life and I can feel sorry for myself, or I can say, you know what, those trials and those tribulations put me in a situation where I am today. I wouldn't be here today without yesterday. My finances wouldn't be what they are today if they weren't what they were yesterday. My relationship with my kids today wouldn't be what they are if they weren't messed up in the yesterday. My marriage wouldn't be what it is today if there wasn't a yesterday. My relationship with some of you would not be what it is today if there was not a yesterday. I can't change the past, but I can change my perspective on the past. It might not have been what I chose to go through. It might not have been the path I chose to go down, but that path molded me, and it made me, and it created me, and it's put me in a position to be who I am today. It's all about perspective. It's why two people can look at the same thing and see something different. Perspective. So when you can't change your circumstances, change your perspective. Now, if you can change your circumstances, change them. Why would you sit there and not change them and just complain all the time? But if you can't change them, you change your perspective. You change the place that you're at. God put him in a position that he needed to be put in. You can be miserable in your circumstances, or you can change the way you look at your circumstances. I can't do anything about this, but I choose to look for God. Oh, my goodness. I can't do anything about this, but I can choose to look for God in this. And when I begin to look for God in the darkness, it suddenly becomes light. When I look for God in the valley, I suddenly can see the mountaintop. When I look for God, when I don't understand why it's happening, suddenly the answers become clear, because it's not about me. It's not about what I want. I don't get to write my story. God writes my story. And God writes your story no matter what. The only thing is, do you choose to accept it or not? Do you choose to look at it through the eyes of God? We look at everything in the natural. But as Christ followers, we operate in the supernatural. If God is God, then his ways are good. If God is God, he says he will never leave us or forsake us. If God is God, then he goes before us and makes the crooked places straight. So you got, my wife posted this yesterday, you got to take the step and follow. He can make all the crooked places straight all day long, but if you're not seeing that far ahead because you're looking through your vision instead of God's vision, you're not taking the steps necessary to do that. I like how he says, even if I'm poor. Listen, he knows what's going to happen. It's so powerful. He means even in this moment, I'm being poured out. Even though I feel like my life is not what I wanted it to be, God has put me in a position. I'll be honest with you. Not in my notes. Just popped in. I'm going to be real honest with you. I'm going to be real blunt with you. And it's going to, if you don't hear my heart in it, it's going to hurt some of your feelings. How many of you, and I know it's very few, how many of you were with me in my previous church? I never talk about that previous church. How many are you with me that time? Denise was with me. Doug Knight was with me. Kathy was with me. Linda Dobbs. Okay. Let's just wrap this up. I moved here when I was 28. I'm 48 now. 20 years ago. No offense. I love you and I love being your pastor. There's no place in the world I would rather be than be your pastor. This was not my vision. My vision was never to stand in front of 200 people in an old grocery store in the ghetto of Canton. My goal was to move here and build the biggest church in this community, which I did. My goal was to start a church that impacted so many people's lives that I traveled the country speaking to tell other people how to do it, which I did. My goal was for every pastor around to know who Gary Lamb was for different reasons than they do now. Let me clarify. That was my goal. Notice I said my goal. Now, here's where the arrogant part comes, and I don't mean to be. I want you to hear my heart. God's plan was for me to be this city's pastor. I didn't say the church pastor, the city's pastor. By losing everything, staying in this community and rebuilding my life, and starting Action Church, and you and me partnering together for Action Church to operate the way it operates, feeding people, clothing people, shelter, homeless, addiction, all the stuff that we do, we might not be we're definitely not the biggest church in this town. Other pastors, if you hear this and it offends you, tough crap. Make no mistake about it, we're the most influential. If this church closed down tomorrow, the community would feel the impact of that. I've always said the measure of a church is if it closes down, would anybody outside of its four walls even know it closed down? If this church closed down, the community would know. When something goes wrong in this community, they call us. When the city needs to take care of homeless people, they call us. When temperatures are dropping, they call us. When influential people in this community that don't go to church on a regular basis need a place to gather together where they can have a prayer vigil, they call us. When people in this community that are influential that don't necessarily go to church need something done, whether it's a wedding, a funeral, whatever, they call us. God's plans were bigger than my plans. God had to break me of my plans to fulfill his plans. Now, I got to be honest with you. Not anymore. Not anymore. But when we first started this thing, there was Sunday mornings I complained and felt sorry for myself. I'll tell you this. I've never told anyone this. There was Sunday mornings I got up. I've never told my wife this. I've never thought about it really till right now. And before I came here, I would drive by my old place to see the thousands of cars in the parking lot. I feel sorry for myself as I drove here. It'd still be real easy to do that. Or I can change my perspective. You could offer me all the money in the world and I wouldn't go back to that place. I wouldn't go back to any other place. I've had offers to go to other churches. Some of you don't even remember this. About our second or third Sunday here, most of you don't know what this means, but if you grew up in more of a Baptist church, that when they needed a pastor, they had a thing called a pulpit committee. It was a group of men, and they would decide who's going to be the next pastor. They called and said, hey, we'd like you to come be our pastor. I said, that ain't going to happen. We'd like to send a pulpit committee to listen to you preach. Don't bother. Showed up here on Sunday, and there was four men in Dockers and a polo shirt. I knew who that was. That was a pulpit committee because they didn't fit in an Action Church. I ain't saying I was right for this, but I got up here, and I made sure the first thing I did was say a couple of cuss words and tell them how it was going to be, and I watched them leave. I ain't going anywhere because it's not about my perspective anymore. It's about God's perspective, and God's perspective is bigger than my perspective. I sit back sometimes and I watch the influence my wife is beginning to have. And I've got another buddy of mine, and I call him. I say, man, I said, I'm trying to blah, 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 blah in my life and get in these positions. I said, Christine ain't trying to do any of that stuff, and she's getting all the positions I thought I wanted to be in. I can get mad about that and complain about that, or I can change my perspective and be like, wow, God has a plan for her. Doesn't negate his plan for me. You change your perspective. See, we'd rather complain about it. I'm going to wrap up here. I like what David said in the Old Testament. To me, it's powerful. Now, here's the deal about David. David complained a lot. You go to the Psalms, man, David complained a lot about a lot of different things. But right here, he's getting a glimpse of the goodness of God. And look what he says. Let all that I am praise the Lord. May I never forget the good things he does for me. He forgives all my sins, heals all my diseases. He redeems me from death and crowns me with love and tender mercies. He fills my life with good things. It's about perspective. You can choose to focus on the negative, or you can choose to focus on the positive. You can choose to focus on the things that drive you crazy, or you can choose to focus on the positive. You can choose to focus on the things that are going wrong. That doesn't mean you just got to ignore them. Sometimes you got to deal with them. Or you can choose to focus on the good. I could have spent the whole day yesterday focusing on the fact that probably that snafu with the beer distributor cost me thousands of dollars. But it didn't really cost me thousands of dollars because I didn't spend the money. It was just, I could have made them more thousands of dollars. Or I can change my perspective and be like, you know what? I spent this amount of money on what I did have, and I made this amount of money for one day's worth of work. I remember what I made yesterday, I used to not make in a month. What I made yesterday, pastoring my old church 20 years ago, I didn't make in 3 months. It's all about perspective. I could have let that whole thing ruin my day. I could have let the chaos of it, trying to figure out what we were going to do in the middle of it, ruin my day. Instead, I just chose to focus on the fact that we had a great event and people had a great time. Now, both things are true. Both things are true. Which one did I choose to focus on? I had a vendor get upset yesterday, a food vendor. They felt like they got put in a bad spot. Everybody can't be put in a good spot. It just is what it is. There's only so many spots. Afterwards, they complained all day. And after, I said, how'd you do today? We had a record-breaking day. Hold on. Would have loved to see what we could do if we had a good spot. Now, both statements are true. They probably could have had a better day. But it don't change the fact they had a record-breaking day. Which one do you want to focus on? If you can change your circumstances, change them. If you can't change your circumstances, change your perspective. Nothing will ruin your life more than a complaining mindset. For as a man thinketh, so he is.